First thing that we like to do is have, this is not TV, unfortunately. So then one, that's good for me especially. But we need you to identify yourselves, please. So, mister, I want to go into the bar and put something in my coffee.
My name's Tom, and I play guitar and sing and do hangovers in Mohair.
I'm Pete, and I play the drums and the trumpet.
Hello, folks. I'm Tim, and I play bass guitar and sing backing vocals.
Hi, folks. I'm Alex. I also sing backing vocals and play keyboards.
You're touring with Razorlight.
Yeah.
What's that like? It's a good musical pairing, I would say, from the perspective of musical style.
It's been a lot of fun. It's been quite interesting for us to see Razorlight in such small venues, you know, because they're doing enormous domes back home. Right. And it's great for us because we're actually playing bigger venues than we play at home because we're still on the toilet circuit in England. So to do these nice clubs of 700, 800 people has been fantastic.
There's one venue that we play quite a lot in Tunbridge Wells, which is sort of south east London, and it's officially the biggest toilet in Britain. It was public the biggest toilet. Biggest public toilet in Britain, and they turned it into a venue. So when you're on stage, you're actually in, like, you know, the girls' cubicle.
This is your second, not your first, South by Southwest.
Yep.
Correct. Uh-huh. So what's different this time around? Because the first time, you know, you certainly were getting up there and people going, Mohair, right?
Yeah.
And this time around, you have been touring with Razorlight and there's been a lot more buzz. So who wants to take the what's different so far question?
Difference is this time, I think, I mean, certainly on paper, if you look at, like, the venue we're playing this year compared to last year, it's like a much bigger venue, which is nice. And we have been doing the Razorlight thing, and I think that's done us a lot of favours. And we've been working real hard, like, over here, touring. We did, like, 9 months before Christmas. And I think people's are actually, their ears are opening, you know what I mean? And I think before, certainly back home, people had a perception of our band because we've been around a little while now. But rather than actually listening to the music, they just had a preconception of what they thought we were. But now I think they're actually listening to it, you know? So that.
Also, I had my appendix out just 2 days before we came last time. So for me, I'm a lot more upright.
But tell me about the weirdest pairing you've had with a band where you've just kind of come out and the audience looks and says, you know, it's not that they throw tomatoes in bottles, but they kind of say, you know, the first song comes on, they're like, wait a minute, we were expecting
a Christina Aguilera tribute support, which was quite strange. Our roadie actually had to help her get changed into her leather chaps backstage via the use of a torch and I think some pliers.
That's a visual. What time is it? Oh, okay, it's afternoon, so that visual's okay.
Okay, that's good. We haven't really.
Before noon, we would not accept that visual.
We did mainly our sort of weirdest gigs in our early days as a band. You know, 8 years ago, we'd be playing anything from a wine museum to, well, we're still playing the renaming of shopping centres and stuff like that. But
renaming of shopping centres.
In America, we actually some friends of ours arranged a gig somewhere in Massachusetts. We thought we'd be playing some bar. And we're playing in a marquee in a parking lot in Lenox. And they're renaming the complex. And we were the band to kick things off.
This is an interesting thing to me. A Commitments cover band.
Yeah.
So now, am I wrong that the Commitments were a cover band?
Yeah.
So you were in a Commitments cover, Commitments cover band. Who played Jimmy?
Yeah, I was a singer, but mainly because I had a ponytail, and that was about as.
It was about 15 years ago. You had to let him know that.
Yeah, it wasn't last week. But we had like three girl singers, and Pete was actually our trumpet player. That's how Pete got in the band, and then my brother was the drummer.
So wait, but you got laid more because you played the lead singer, right? And didn't he get laid by all the girls?
No, that was the trumpet player. Yeah.
Did you get laid more?
We were only 12.
I love from your bio, four like-minded souls in a sea of commuting carcasses. Would somebody like to define that?
I suppose, like, where we come from is a town called Watford, which is about 15 miles north of London. And because it's so close to London, it has no kind of discernible vibe of its own, you know, because it's sort of pretending to be part of London, but it isn't really. And so you get a lot of people in there who just get on the train each morning at the same time with the same people and go to the same office. And for me, I find that quite unbearable to think about. I'm not judging them for doing that because that's what a lot of people do, but that's what they do. So
it depends what the job is, doesn't it, I suppose. If you're going to milk cows in London, then great.
This album on Grunion is technically a remix of an earlier effort. So, and you worked with John Goodmanson. So tell me a little bit about the remix and the producer-band relationship and all that good stuff.
Well, we made the album in England with a guy called Mark Wallace, who is an excellent producer. But we weren't particularly happy with the mix in the end. And then when we signed to Grunion in America, they were kind of like, okay, well, you know, we'll remix it. And we were like, thank God, you know, we're pleased about that. Because we didn't really talk about how disappointed with the mix we were until we had an option to redo it. You know, it was like, all right, that's just what it is. And then John Goodmanson, who we've never actually met, we spoke to him on the phone every day, we emailed him every day, he sent us stuff and we sent it back and sent his stuff and sent it back. So we were present at the mixing, but from 3,000 miles away. It was very strange. And yeah, so we had it remixed and we're now going to re-release it in England.
Look at that. What's that say?
And then re-release it at home. There you go.
What was nice about it is when we did it originally with Mark Wallace, he's quite a sanitised producer, I think that's the right word, you know, so he'll sort of sanitise things and, you know, he's not really up for experimenting sonically anymore. I don't think he's done that and he's past that now. And we're still at that stage. And so what was nice about the remix with John, he'd do things like put the drum sound through speakers in a baseball court and then re-mic the... mic up the results and then use that as reverb, and we're really into that kind of stuff. So his mix came back; it was a lot more personal for us, I think, than it was before, which is great.
And yet, working over the phone, you got what you wanted, which I guess is a tribute to how good he is. That'd be the best way to.
Well, he did the Blonde Redhead album, which is one of my favorite records of the last few years.
You know, whether you take the Fratellis or Peter Bjorn and John, or you know, you take any of the bands that are really truly forward melodically. You fit right in. I'm not saying you're like them, but you fit right in there. So tell me a little bit about that, you know.
Well, we're interested in writing pop songs. We're a rock and roll band at heart. That's where we kind of, you know, base all of our knowledge, I suppose, and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, we're all melody people. Pete is a trumpet player, which is obviously a melody instrument. You know, it's the most...
Yeah.
But it's the most important thing to us, you know, like a bit of whistle ability, and you know, we all love the Beatles, obviously, and you know, they had it down; they were the masters of it, and we learned from that, really.
So, what's wrong with the reviewers? Not because it's my favorite thing to do, because I'm not a reviewer; I'm just a guy who plays stuff. Right. Elton John, Led Zeppelin, The Doors. Where are they hearing? Yeah. Where are they hearing these? I mean, just because there's keyboard in there, exactly, doesn't suddenly mean that it's The Doors, right? And just because there's horns in there doesn't necessarily mean that it, you know, that your blood, sweat, and tears, you know. So where do you think they come up with this stuff?
It's English journalism. I think it's very easy for a journalist to be lazy and say, you know, for instance, we get a lot of people saying we sound like the Charlatans because there's a Hammond organ in there. And it's like, well, we don't like the Charlatans, really. We're not fans, you know. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, got a few good songs, but we're not really, we don't follow them. But it's the same thing with the Doors one, and I think Elton John, the Watford connection.
Let's talk about a few of the songs because the it's kind of an interesting mix, and I don't know about the sequence in the album or how you went about it, but some subjects, you know, so Talk of the Town you open up with, which is just kind of an anthem-y kind of tribute to, you know, who the band is and what you want to be and all of that.
Yeah, kind of. It's a much darker song than it sounds. Lyrically, you know, we were in a pretty bad place at the time, trying to break out of where we lived, and we were in a kind of crappy record deal that went down the toilet, and it's quite a dark song. But if you actually like really analyse them, they're all quite dark songs, but we have sort of a sunny demeanour about us somehow, and we like, you know, major keys, so everything sounds...
Most of our songs, I mean, a lot of them are written in a period after we got out of our last record deal in this 300-year-old stone barn in Scotland, which we decamped to about 2-3 years ago, and they're all about like keeping things together about
Stranded and End of the Line. You take those three, you don't even have to listen to the songs, you take those three, followed by Disarray.
The songs are kind of happy-go-lucky, upbeat, you know, powerful energy songs, but actually the subject matters...
But isn't it what our songs will be like if ever we do sort of have piles of money and piles of cocaine and stuff and all the trappings that rock and roll brings?
Absolutely.
You know, what the song titles will be.
Yeah.
Look at me, you bastards, I've got all this cash or something like that, yeah. I don't know.
I think you just write what comes up at the time. You have to be honest to what you're doing at the time.
Weirdest gig in all the years?
Oh, we got so many. Every now and then we think, right, what's the weirdest or what's the worst gig we've ever done? And everyone comes up with a different one, and it's always like, oh, do you remember that? You know, I think for me, actually, in recent times, the shopping complex in Lenox, Massachusetts was kind of, yeah, the renaming of the shopping complex, that was kind of weird for me.
The children's what?
It's a children's dance troupe, like doing hip-hop dance as a... that was the support act.
Yeah. Wow. You've made it.
We had a gig at an aircraft hangar, which was none more Spinal Tap. It was for like this general's Christmas ball.
Yeah.
And they actually pulled the plug. This was like many years ago, doing covers. They pulled the plug on us midway through the set. So it was like we're playing like Smoke and Water or something. And suddenly it was... We just had to get off the stage and run, basically. It wasn't happy with our sound, I don't think.
What country do you want to conquer next? Because you've done... Now you're the US is getting a big taste.
I think England would be good, because we've been there for nigh on a decade trying to really make a mark.
It's such a competitive market. It's a tiny little island that's a third the size of Texas, and so much great music is being made. In the way that, I don't know, in the way that it all comes up, I guess some crap comes to the top as well. It always does.
I think, you know, also... There's like maybe one magazine, one radio station, three key players, if you will, in those media markets that control who gets listened to. You know what I mean? So if you're not a member of that club, you're not going to get anywhere. Whereas over here, you have a number of key radio stations per state, and there's 50-odd states, you know what I mean? So, and as I say, unless you're part of that very small clique in England, it's very hard to rise to the surface if they're not into you.
We've invented this thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs, or three if you want a club, if you want to be piggish about it, as the bread, and then you're each going to pick two or three fillings from other bands, and I will play it on the radio with the rest of the hour precisely as you ask for it.
Right, so I reckon we should have Stranded and End of the Line. Okay, so I would, we can pick one each, I suppose. That would be a way to do it.
I want, if we may, I think we should open up our music here with Stranded, I think, in the middle of nowhere, one of our songs. And then I think I would like the Ghostbusters theme tune. Yes, please. Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, I haven't heard that for years. That
would
be fantastic.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's what
I want. Well, I'd like to hear Doll Is Mine by Blonde Redhead.
I'd love to hear Bob Dylan's 115th Dream. It's all about coming to America and finding a crazy place.
Okay.
And is this a Mohair song or a...
No, this is your own choice.
Oh, okay. Rocks Off by the Rolling Stones.
Okay, so then I would move on to... what's that track, the Ambulance Limited track? It's called Primitive, and then in brackets, Relax, Don't... The way I treat you.
Track
two on the Ambulance LTD album.
Radiohead, Exit Music for a Film.
This is sort of a nod to the 80s, really. A View to a Kill by Duran Duran.
Good choice to me. I'd like to hear Just for a Moment by Aqualung.
I'd like to hear Teardrop off the Mezzanine album, Massive Attack.
Well, and we should do another one of ours, though, shouldn't we?
End of the Line.
End of the Line. End of the Line by us. There you go.